Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to Where the Music Never Ends. We're so glad for all your minds that we find, that we find. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Late Night Poets Rhythm and Rhyme Show. We are part of the world's largest community, that's allpoetry.com, and there you shall find us, the Late Night Poets. We put these radio shows on 7 nights a week, 10 p.m. till midnight. Come hang with our wild dove, Muyu, in Nature and Passion on Mondays. Dig into the twisted thoughts of the Twisted Sisters on Twisted Tuesdays. Turn up the heat with the Art of Seduction on Wednesday. Thursdays are split between In Our Craft, The Sun and Art with Richard and Neutron, and Double Helix with Asian Index. Friday, and Fill My Eyes with Open Poetry. And Saturday, split between Grey Eyes Howling at the Moon, The Canadian Wilds, Bringing You Bad Company, and Ekphrasia with Captain B2 and Dan. And if you're looking for a little more edgier realm, then check out our After Midnight shows, 4:30 to 2:30 a.m., Monday through Saturday mornings. Mondays are split between Hearts of LMP with Victoria and Black Lace Diaries with Mistress Frost. Tuesday, I'm Take a Walk on the Wild Side. Friday is a split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. And Saturday, join Aphasiana and Babla as they teach you the fine art of becoming part saint, part sinner. Check out the contests and prompts for all of our shows. Call it to read your poems and hang for the fun. Good evening, Jean.
Well, hello, Rex, and how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm just dandy. How about you?
Wonderful. Well, you know, I'm a little tired, but I'm not doing too bad. You know, story of my life.
I told you to catch up on sleep with the kid gone. He's not coming.
God, I should have listened. I should have listened. Silly me. Well, you know, live and learn, right? Isn't that what they say? God, yeah. So tell me a little bit about these food writers and, you know, the Mr. Hawkins.
Well, Dave Grohl was the original member, well, the first Melanie member at the beginning. He started it in 94, right after the Kurt Cobain had died and the Nirvana kind of split. Dave Grohl was the drummer for the Nirvana. He wrote, he got offers for other bands to join them as the drummer, but he didn't want to be just the drummer. He wanted to be the front man. So he was already writing songs. He didn't give any of those to Cobain for use. He was a little intimidated back then. So he did spend some time in his recording studio putting these 15 songs together for the first Foo Fighters album. And he thought of the Foo Fighters as a lark, because it's what they used to call the UFOs back in World War II when they saw these little strange objects flying around. Anyway, he recorded a demo of those 15 songs. He played every instrument, and he sang all the songs himself, rummaged it around trying to get some feedback, and he did get some feedback and got a record contract for it. Then he had to start finding some people to help back him up for the tour. That went off in 95. Then the record came out. And 96, early 97, they were going into a studio to do their second album, which he wrote all the songs for again. And
wow.
He took all the recordings out to L.A. He was going to get them mixed up and play his add his guitar and vocals out there, but he wasn't happy with the drums on the recording. So he redid all the drum parts himself, and there was a rift between him and the drummer at the time, and he quit. So at that time, he started looking around for a drummer. They finally got the second album done and went to print. And he started making phone calls, and one of those phone calls was to Taylor Hawkins, who was playing with Alanis Morissette at the time, doing two tours with her from 95 to 97. So he talked to Taylor about, hey, do you know any drummers out there looking for a gig? Because I'm in need of a drummer at the moment. And to his very big surprise, because he wasn't expecting it, Taylor actually said, yeah, me. And that's where he joined the group later in around March of 97. He had to learn all the music for that new album, plus the old stuff, and then went on tour with him. And he didn't actually do any recording for the first two albums, but he played the music. And from the third album on, he got writing credits along with Dave Grohl and some of the other band members when they went into studio.
Wow. A lot of stuff falls all in that little bit of time. Just so you know, I picked Pam up. Hey, Pam.
Hi, Jean. Hi, Rex. Good to hear
you
both. Yes. Awesome topic tonight,
too,
Rex. Great song choices.
See that?
Yes.
See that? It's all good. All good. Just so rebuff. So that's all pretty interesting stuff about this fella. Absolutely.
I was considering what something you sent me, what Taylor said about his time with Alanis Morissette. Everybody thought they were goody two shoes, and he said they were behind the scenes. They were pretty much scumbags, and they were Van Halen without being Van Halen noted.
Yeah, there's a couple of good quotes and things in there, I thought. Okay. But, yeah, it's very interesting. I don't know anything about this music at all tonight, so I'm just pushing buttons. I'm definitely the elevator operator in this joint. But pretty cool, pretty interesting.
Oh, my God. That's funny.
You envisioning me in my usher outfit pushing buttons and taking people to the floor or what? Just saying. God. Yes. And I have a little hat, too, like the bellboy. Anyway, I know I'm going to ask. We have two more callers on the line. I believe the first one is Dex. Hello, Dex. Is that you?
That is. Hey, Rex.
Hey,
great explanation. Glad I could be here.
Good to have you. And the next one, the person I had to bring on is Laurent. Hello, Laurent. What? I got to hit the button first. Hello, Laurent. How are you tonight?
Hey, hey, hey. Pleasure to be here. How's everybody?
Good evening.
Yep, Bruce. So we're doing, we got 5 of us. That's nice. Okay, everybody has to speak for how long, Rex?
20 minutes.
Okay,
I'm kidding.
20 minutes apiece. Y'all got to come up with something. Oh, my God. See that? No. So, anyway. Too funny. See that? Okay, I'm being bad. Okay, well, I don't know. You guys have anywhere else you want to go before I... Like, I don't know. Grab a poem.
Yeah, I'm in a rush to go home.
Okay. You want to who? You want to go home?
I'm just teasing.
What are you saying? Look now. Nope, nope, nope. I gave up a perfectly good nap to be here tonight. Don't start. Oh, my God. So everybody is so dead quiet. I'm starting to think maybe I'm on hold, or mute or something. So y'all got to stop that crap.
I was just being quiet because you and Rex were talking. I don't know what you want me to say. I mean, do you want me to interrupt your conversation?
Well, it's a public conversation, Ben. It was a public conversation. See, that's the difference. You know, we're all here. We're all a team, man. We're all a team. Okay. Well, I don't know, but
tell you what.
Oh, look,
why don't we give Pam the first one? I stuck it on the board. That poem by Stevie Nicks.
There you go. You got those Stevie Nicks kind of voice.
But she's not paying attention.
Oh, what?
You got to get off mute, Pam.
Okay, yes, I am. I'm sorry. What was it?
Didn't that sound like a directive, Rex?
You got the Stevie Nicks piece.
Oh, okay. I wasn't expecting that. All right. Well, cool. All right. This is a poem by Stevie Nicks written when Taylor Hawkins passed away. And it goes like this. and sad. I am sad now. I am really sad, like rolling thunder. Yes, what I said. It's like a bad dream. Comes like a wave, gives you a moment, and then drags you away. Our hearts are broken. We will never be the same. As I write these words, I feel the pain, but I will always remember that the laughter and the fame brought us together to play the game. And we played it again and again and again, and it was extraordinary. Don't forget us, T. We'll be right here. Love you, Stevie. And Tim.
Gregory Pant, thank you very much. And, oh, Laurent, you were in the back door. Why don't you kick us off with your thoughts on a Stevie Nicks piece?
Yeah, I don't, as Dean said, I don't know the music at all, but I can look at the words. And to play the game, and we played it again and again and again, and it was extraordinary. To my mind, that's the game of love, game of a relationship, the game of life. But could also easily be the game of fame, that you have to play at that certain level in order to survive and then succeed. I'm sure in many ways it's a game. You can feel the that there's a certain, it doesn't lack for sorrow. There's a certain matter-of-factness about the way she wrote it that I can kind of appreciate, kind of a little bit of a distance maybe to try and keep the pain away. I don't know. At any rate, it's very moving.
Thank you, Laurent. And Dex, how about you?
Well, I thought Laurent hit the nail kind of on the head on it. You know, it is very moving. And, you know, kind of brings to light a side of a relationship I guess I didn't know even existed. You know, it's kind of interesting to just sometimes hear in Hollywood and in the entertainment industry who all even knows each other and intermingles. So very sad poem, but very
thank you, Dex. And Gene, how about you? Oh, Gene.
Set off the mute alarm.
I was trying to avoid that one. But maybe she's in the back room.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Sitting here drinking gin, being good. I think these words are really...
Bombay Bombers?
Really wonderful. Well, I don't know. Since I don't have any mixers, it's going to be a wild ride. That's what I'm going to tell you about it. I think I really... I can't say I enjoyed it, but I think it was a wonderful offering from Stevie to... Stella Hawkins' spirit. You know, don't forget us. We'll be here. You know, and I think they were wonderful and caring words. You know, it's so hard when you lose somebody that you're close to, whether you worked with them or you were in love with them, or it really doesn't matter the situation as long as you know it's that closeness. And some people make us smile, and some people, you know, make us laugh. And some people, well, you know, they make us not so happy. But, you know, it's all in the expression. You know, it's the way we spend our time together. And I think that this was just a lovely offering to him. And I'm kind of glad you found that one. I think it's a pretty neat piece. So, thank you, Dex.
Oh, Pam brought this to my attention, so she gets to comment next.
Yes.
Down.
Yeah, I thought I am not. I just honestly didn't hear you say my name. But I thought this was absolutely beautiful. I didn't realize, I guess, that him and Stevie Nicks were close friends or had actually done some music together, like playing in concert. I thought that was really cool. You know, I think when it comes to grief, oftentimes the most beautiful words are the simple words. You know, and there's some metaphors in here, but they're easygoing, easy to understand, comes like a wave. You know, the idea of the rolling thunder. But for the most part, it's very straightforward in the idea that they played the game of fame together. And it was a tribute to how truly extraordinary his gift was and how he shared it with other people. And what I really like about this is this poem, to me, it takes a person that Stevie Nicks is so famous, so well known, she's almost at goddess level, in my opinion. And so it's easy to forget when somebody's that extraordinary how human they are. And I think by her putting out this poem, this dedication, she shows us the humanity not only to Taylor Hawkins, but of herself. This is beautifully written and very well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Pam. I got two things. I think the Rolling Thunder was a nice reference to Hawkins playing drums. And the backstory to this was Stevie Nicks did play some time with the Foo Fighters, and she said they invited her in as part of the clan, and she loved them for it. And she was also thankful that they had one of those old photo machines in their studio, because now she still has those pictures, like that little strip of four or five pictures you get out of the photo machine of her and Taylor in the booth. And she will always have that memory to hold on to from those times in the studio. So that was the backstory. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Oh, yeah? Are you? I'm coming back to you. Put this piece up for you, Rex, whenever you're ready.
Okie dokie. What Power Are You by Ilix Ather. What power are you to step up to my temple, peer within my stained crystal eyes, and wantonly throw around the stench of utterly unbacked confidence, claiming to my face that my will is insufficient, the choices I make are invalid under the light of the divine power you claim to serve without bothering to lend an ear for their words? Who do you, so high in self-importance, puffed up with the phrases ringing from the sycophants, making a temporary home around an impermanent power's momentary whims, drunk on fleeting tastes of godhood, masked by your blanket claims, feigning devotion while attempting to grab higher authority? Think you truly are, under that mask, built on the pain you've indiscriminately caused, peddling lies in the name of faith? Do you really think a pretender's claim and a false throne is enough to overthrow this religion of one? The path of the godless heretics I forged as I marked my own fate, through the faceless masses, hypocrites of your colors, daring to block my way? In a world filled with legions of impostors, just like you, how could you think yourself enough of an immovable object to stop the force I wish would be? End poem. And Ilix took the song The Pretender as his prompt. Nicely done, Ilix. Thank you. All right, Pam, why don't we start with you, please?
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex, and just a powerful write by Ilix. There are two main themes I get of this. First of all, I get the idea of someone who strongly believes in themselves. And not in an egotistical way, but just in the kind of way of, you know, I know I'm important to people. I'm important to myself. And then there's that idea of people who, the hypocrisy, especially in the religious sect, of how somebody can take moral lessons and twist them so that they point the fingers at everyone else except for themselves. It very much makes me think of, you know, don't judge somebody else just because they sin different than you. We all have our shortcomings. We all have our sins. And who are you to judge? I really like that he chose, that Ilex chose to use the legions, in a world filled with legions of imposter. It makes me think of that line in that one really scary movie, I Am Legion, which actually is in the Bible too, and the whole idea of all the legions of demons possessing this man. And instead it's that legions of imposters, the falsehood that comes underneath the blanket of those who claim to be righteous. And I do think there is a point in here where they mention, if I remember right, yes, masked by your blanket claim. Now, I am one who firmly believes never argue your point with blanketed statements, because there is never anything that covers all there is out in the universe. And if you do that, you're a fool. And I really like, to me, Ilex really calls out those fools who use blanketed statements, who really don't see any way but their own. So just a powerful write all the way through, filled with confidence, and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. And Dex, how about you?
Yeah, Pam nailed it. I thought that this was an extraordinary write. I apologize to Ilex, because I know that it's not the angle that he was going for, but I just kept thinking Putin the whole time, and it's probably just because of the times and what we're currently in. But I just thought that this was such a phenomenal write. It had so much truth woven throughout. You know, who do you, so high on self-importance, puffed up with the praises? He just captured that finger pointing essence so well. It's just a
excellent. Thank you there, Dex. And Laurence, how about you?
Claiming to my face that my will is insufficient, the choices I make are invalid under the light of the divine power you claim to serve, without bothering to lend an ear to their words. This poem strikes me not only words from a person who's very self-confident in themselves, but sees the bastardization of religion, the false prophets, the TV, churches, the tent revivals, and it's always about Jesus knows what's best for you, and we need your money, and they give it to you a thousand different ways, belittling the people, telling them they're sinners and they have to be saved. Look, this entire poem just really strikes me as a very strong response to those false prophets who attempt to milk people. And it's mixed with something a little bit stronger. What power are you to step up to my temple, peer within my stained crystal eyes, and wantonly throw around the stench of utterly unbacked confidence? I don't think this is about any individual. It's about a whole cohort of individuals who are ugly, ugly in what they do.
Absolutely. Great comment, Laurent. Thank you. And Jean, how about you?
I think this is a very powerful and pointed right. I find that, it could go the direction that Laurent is, pointing towards the church. And yes, I think this is just pointed towards society in general. You know, those that think they're better than everybody else and just looking down on everyone. And I think that this is a shout out and a hey you, written in a wonderful fashion by Ilex. Down here, the path of the godless heretic I forged as I marked my own fate for the faceless masses, hypocrites of your colors, daring to block my way. In a world filled with legions of imposters just like you, how could you think yourself enough of an immovable object to stop the force I wish to be? I think that those two last two stanzas were just phenomenal. Really well done, and great work, Alex, for real. There's so much going on in here, and just pointing it out and, you know, making it known, you know, saying this piece. So I think it was really well done.
Great comments, everyone, and I think you're all right. This does have a nice heavy stinger that points at everyone. But I got, because of the language used, what power are you to step up to my temple, peer within my stained crystal eyes, and want me throw around the stench of utterly unbacked confidence? And who do you in so high of self-importance? And just the language that Illich used, do you really think a pretender's claim in a false throne is enough to overthrow this religion of one? And then again, how could you think yourself enough an immovable object to stop the force I wish to be? It is hit on that note of morality and the faithless voices, but it kind of comes across as almost a godly voice speaking. How dare you compare yourself to me? I am the one. That's your self-imposed, self-important, pugnacious attitude. Humble yourself. And that's what I get out of this. It hits on the notes of lost morality, lost faith, and you all should be getting back to what is as opposed to what you think it should be. Nicely done, Ellie. Thank you very much. All right, Gene. We're coming back. I see you.
Okie dokie. Anybody want to sing a song? Or? Yeah. Just kidding.
Okay. Sing a song, Sixpence, Pocket Full of Rye.
Oh, see that? 20 blackbirds.
I know you vote for Rex to sing.
No, thank you.
There you go.
I'm still got a sore throat from that coughing.
Oh, my goodness. Well, no. At least you weren't having a heart attack.
Oh, no.
Well, I couldn't breathe because it came out my nose, too, so I had no way to breathe.
Oh, yeah, you sounded horrible. I was worried.
Oh,
but
my God. Okay. Well, the next piece I have is for Pam. So, Pam, you can sing this, okay? You ready?
Okay.
Sing it loud and proud, girl.
All right. Old Men Pretenders by Time Teller. And it goes like this. I know of people dressed to kill, old and new friends like an old man Bill, tell their stories all night long, and no one's left from their youth to sing a different song. Some gather like a murderer up in the trees, colluding and scheming, they're as busy as bees. It's always help when they are discovered, yet we seem pushed when they left hidden and covered. We're in the dark, paranoid of pretense at beginnings, 10 green bottles, so many doorways to collect the winnings. Well, that's the bait of it when told the dangled carrot or sprat for a mackerel. Then we're thrown in deep waters, so, so cold. They swam about us, watching our every move. On suicide watch, they gathered entirely the wrong, worn-out groove. Don't pretend you're not watching or asking to get inside our clues. Want to know our thinking and try too hard and we get the blues. All night long we sit and listen to old man Bill. The girls so love him and so he starts to no longer thrill. Let's leave. Get out of here. Get home to bed. Old man Bill is a pretender. His stories are made up from his head. Don't listen to them anymore. So many people dressed to kill like sharks washed up upon the shore. we're lost among the many. Is it real? Is it real to look and feel anyway? Or have we started to become pretenders with exaggerated stories of our youth, torn jeans, motorbikes, mini skirts, pierced body parts, smoking street corners, fingering records, shops, kids old before our time, great, awesome, pinkness, bubblegum, end poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And I believe Jean has something she wishes to say.
I do. Chris Bond is on the line.
I had a feeling they were going there.
Morning.
Wasn't expecting that.
How you doing, Corey? Good to hear you.
Thank you very much, Rex. Talk to you bye. Thank you.
Hey, Chris. I thought you weren't going to call in. It's good to hear from you.
I'm awake, Pam, so I might as well.
Oh, awesome.
Very good. Very true, very true. So, now did you want me to comment or did you just want me to introduce Chris?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I kind of got something there. Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, they're old men pretenders that kind of reach the end of their rope, and all they have is their youth to tell about. And they would very much like to be part of what's going on, but it's difficult. And there's nobody around from that generation left to back up any stories or call them fake. And they do manage to keep you off balance with everything they've got stored up in the dark, paranoid of pretense of beginnings. 10 green bottles, so many doorways to collect our winnings. They swarm about us watching our every move, or suicide watch they gather, entirely the wrong, worn-out groove. And they do watch, and they do make up stories. Like all of us, I think, we tend sometimes to embellish the path a little bit. Yeah, I was there. Yeah, I did this. I remember that. I saw it. Absolutely. It's a very interesting piece. And that last line, great, awesome, big, thick bubblegum, just made me smile.
Excellent. Thank you, Ron. And Dex, how about you?
I thought that I'm kind of torn between two different sides. I think that I'm torn between kind of like what Laurent said about an old time or old men that have these stories, and I'm also kind of torn between this time's now fascination with retro. And it's kind of interesting now to see, like, people taking pictures and putting old filters on them. And now how they're all dressing as if it were retro. And almost kind of now social media, you can kind of take pictures as if you're right in the mix all the time. And I know it says, listen to old man Bill, the girls so love him. But I thought that this was could almost kind of go both ways, because I think that it's so interesting now to see now what's the end thing is to be the old thing or whatever. So very well done, though, either way.
Thank you, Dex. Chris, did you get to hear that?
Yeah, I've read the poem as well. I mean, the main thing I get from it is reminiscence, like a sort of, I say we all look back on our lives in a way and sort of try and remember, we all, I say, embellish those stories. And the thing that young people remember, Rex, is they're going to be in this position one day. They're going to be embellishing their own stories looking back. That's the sort of main thing I got from it, is reminiscence.
Excellent. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, we all think of our old guys telling stories, but I say one day we're going to be telling those stories back to them young people, and they'll be thinking the same breath. It's a great write. It's a really good, well-written poem.
Excellent. How about you, Jean?
I find it to be a really what'd you say? I think it's a really interesting write. I think. I'm gonna be quiet now. What'd you say?
I said back. What about you, Jean? I said that was an accident.
Oh, That's okay, because you know what? I didn't even catch it that time. Isn't that awful? That's why I was confused, I think. Wow. I'm flipping. You know, I think this is really well done, and you know, because I know people dress to kill, old and new friends, like an old man Bill. Tell their stories all night long, and no one's left from their youth to sing a different song. You know, it is. It's easy to, like, embellish those stories and tell it the way that you want it to be heard, not always necessarily the exact way that it happened. And, you know, it's your choice now because nobody's here to argue, you know, or say, no, it didn't happen that way. And, you know, I love hearing this is, we're in the dark, paranoid of pretense and beginnings. 10 green bottles, so many doorways to collect our winnings. I'm not sure about the doorways, but, you know, well, that's the bait of it when told. The dangled carrot or sprat for the mackerel. Then we're thrown in deep waters, so, so cold. I don't know. That's an interesting kind of place. I'm like, well, what is that? Where are we? But when you get down to the end, I thought that was an excellent closing stanza. Yeah, it's long, but it's very kind of colorful. You know, it's got a lot of things going on. And, you know, how it ended with great, awesome pinkness, bubblegum. I was like, okay, well, we ended on a bright note. I'll give it that. But, yeah, nicely done and clever piece.
Well, thank you, Jean. And Pam, you got to read it.
Well, first of all, I thought it was really great to hear everybody's comments. I particularly liked the way, you know, Lauren to comment first and then Dexter commented after him. And Dexter said, well, you know, basically I had seen it this way, but now that I've heard Lauren's comment, I could see it both ways. And I think that is one of the best things about poetry and discussing poetry is how we can open our minds to how other poets see it. I really like how he doesn't name a specific generation. It's almost like to me the idea that from generation to generation, we always think we're better than the one before. And it's also kind of that idea like it doesn't even necessarily have to be a generational thing. Sometimes you just remember yourself as slightly cooler than you probably were, or there's this exaggerated stories to make yourself feel better about yourself. I also couldn't help but think of the title of the movie, Kill Bill, just because of some of the phrasing in this. You know, to me, it just really picks apart each generation and how we feel about ourselves. Now, I liked the parts that Phil picked out. You know, I also like some gathered like murder up in the trees. Great reference to murder of crows, colluding and scheming there as busy bees. Now, to me, that doesn't just touch on, you know, it's about the old man Bill and how full of himself he is. To me, that stanza there is very gender neutral. In fact, it kind of reminds me of the old ladies that you might have gossiping across the fence. It very much has that gossipy tone to it. I also thought there was some nice humor to this, and the green bottles that Phil had brought up was a really great point. To me, well, first of all, I always think of, what is that green fairy drink? Absinthe. That's it. Thank you, Jean. Yeah. It makes me think of that, but it also makes me think my mom used to be a big collector of old-fashioned glass bottles. And soda actually used to come in green glass. In fact, a lot of stuff used to be made in green glass. So to me, it's kind of looking back at those days that you long for. It's that idea of you no longer feeling your prime, so you have to look back at those green bottle days when there was a future that felt bright, felt like it had potential. And so just a wonderfully written, thought-provoking, and very well done.
Great comments, everybody. Thank you, Pam. I think you're all right to some degree or another. I think this is layered on purpose with a differentiating thought to each little bit. From that first stanza, you hit on the note of, I know of people dressed to kill, old and new friends like an old man Bill, tell their stories all night long. and No One's Left in Their Youth to sing a different song. Kind of hits on the note of gang life, blood in, blood out. And when there's only one left, who's to argue the point? And I picked up on that same thing Pam did, the gathering like a murder up in the trees, a murder of crows. So there's the gabalots. And then they strike, when they get discovered, you hear that inevitable cry of, help, we didn't do anything. And you hit on the dangled carrot, the sprat for a mackerel, then we're thrown in deep water, so cold. Kind of hits on that notion of we're in the dark, paranoid, the pretense at the beginning, the initiality of birth, so to speak, and then the growth. When you get to a certain age, you get thrown in the deep end because, hey, it's either sink or swim in life. And then you get that other one with the swarm of bats. There's always somebody looking for you to go down the short path and end up within their realm where they can egg you into something different, like the suicide watch they offer there. And what else we got? On the back end of this, it's on the, is it real to look and feel anyway? Or have we started to become pretenders with exaggerated stories of our youth? Then it hits on that note of the back end of this, of how with age, things go a little longer in the tail, a little longer in the tooth. And the last couple of lines hit on that note of what is the difference now between the kids, pierced body parts, smoking street corners, finger record shop, kids old before our time. All right. It's kind of notion that inner city youth is aging before their relevance is even allowed to shine. And that's where you get that last line. Great, awesome pinkness, bubblegum. Note to a touch of nostalgia in youth, where bubblegum was the thought, hey, that was something you enjoyed. But there isn't a whole lot of enjoyment these days. In youth, anyway. All right, Jeannie, we're coming back to you.
Well, you know, I want to say this this piece, the first three stanzas of this piece, you know, Pam, your green bottles, you kind of like kicked in. Because I envisioned them when I read that as being beer bottles, Heineken bottles kind of thing, green beer bottles lined up along the bar. And, you know, in the beginning of this, I envisioned this old, you know, older neighborhood man going down to the local chappie and sitting there and telling his stories to anyone who will listen. So that's kind of what I got from that. But when you said green bottles, I'm like, well, yeah, that's kind of what, because the doorways had me so confused. I was like, well, I don't know about that. So it's funny how we all went different directions with this in different pieces, like, you know, like you said. Yeah, you know, it is layered, like Rex said, and I think that, you know, we kind of pull out of it different bits and pieces of it, you know, to take us different directions. But it is intriguing how we all have, you know, different thoughts on it. It's pretty cool. Okay, I'll set up now. Sorry. I don't even know where I'm going. I was all confused. Okay, now who's next? Laurent. Laurent. Okay, Laurent, I guess the next one up for you. Well, if I can find the room. Oh, there it is. Hello. Hello, everybody. I'm waving. Here we go. Whenever you're ready.
All right. How can I fly by darkened auras? I wake up every morning. Spent many years upon this earth. Still haven't found the answer. What craft will finally give me worth? I used to love to draw and write. Now arthritis pains my hands. I loved to be creative long ago. Now my mind's just an empty stance. I love to sing to myself alone. See? I truly hate my voice. And also my reflection. So, singers, dancers, not a choice. I know the answer's out there. Maybe somewhere in the sky. God, please send an idea I can try that will let my spirit fly. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Chris, why don't we start with you, please?
What a great write. Again, I mean, it's It's about the life I suppose you dream of having, but unfortunately you don't think you've got the voice, or you don't think you've got the looks to be a superstar. And even then your body turns on you, like you say, I used to love and draw and write. Now arthritis pains my hands. I loved to be a creative long ago. Now my mind just empty stands. It's sort of, like I say, it's looking at what you once were and what you're becoming, and you think, there must be something I can do now. Like I say, it's a very good reflective write. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Great read as well.
Wonderful comment, Chris. Thank you very much. And Dan, how about you?
I enjoyed this one. First of all, as always, wonderful rhyme and flow. Very relatable. I like that it starts with the question, how can I fly? And it's that idea of how your mind, you know, your gifts, what gifts you can have to make you feel like you're soaring. You know, this is wonderful all the way through, but I really did relate to that third stanza. I love to sing to myself alone. See, I truly hate my voice and also my reflection. So singer dancer is not a choice. I actually, when I was a little girl, ballerina was on my list of things I wanted to be, along with a private detective and a poet. That did not work out. The closest I got is I write poetry. I am not a private detective. I am not a ballerina. But I really like how this has that prayerful feel to it of, you know what, let me find a gift I can use that not only allows me to feel uplifted, but uplifts others as well. So beautifully written and very well done.
There you go. You heard it here. Pam wanted to be Velda in the Mystery Machine with Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Dex, how about you?
Yeah, this is a very beautiful but sad, right? You know, I think that it's about kind of reaching a point where whatever standard is in your mind of what success is, you know, hasn't been reached, you start to maybe reflect and think, well, what is it that I do that's good at all? Is there anything that I do that's good at all? What skills do I possess? And and that kind of starts to dim and weather away all the things that you've kind of done throughout life too. It's very sad, but it's a very beautiful write.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Dex. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I enjoyed the rhyme of this piece. And I think that it's like the last stanza, of course, is really where, you know, those thoughts come in, but it's like a request for calling. It's like asking God to give you your direction and your calling in life, so you know you don't waste time trying to figure it out. I don't know how else to put that. That's what I kind of felt from that. And I wish I knew the music, because this is written to learn to fly, and I don't really know how it fits together. But it was definitely you know, a nice write. That's what I have to say. And thank you so much, Dark and Aura.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
Okay, I kind of relate to quite a bit of this, unfortunately. But, you know, in the fourth line of the first stanza, when Dark and Aura says, "What craft will finally give me worth?" I know what that means. But perhaps the meaning is what craft at the end of my life, not which one is going to finally reward me, because I used to love to draw and write, be creative. Surely he would have been filled with that process and found worth in it, perhaps. But, you know, perhaps he didn't reach a pinnacle, figures he still can, but simply needs one last idea that's going to allow him to fly. Personally, he writes so well. I think he's got that in hand.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I'm going to walk up the edge a little bit. I think it comes with the first line of each stanza. I wake up every morning. I used to love to draw and write. I love to sing to myself alone. I know the answers out there. I know that third stanza, I truly hate my voice, a little self-deprecation in there. But I think the basis in this is they're lonely. There's no other around. A little touch of inspiration for that second stanza, or someone around that they can impart their knowledge to draw and write, or to help in some other way. I think the loneliness is what sits hard in this, and it kind of stands out hard. Thank you, Dark. All right, Jean, how about you? We're coming back your way.
And I wanted to add to that that Laurent, you made it sound like this was someone's like later years. I don't find this to be that. I found this to be, I mean, someone could be in their 20s and know that they like to draw and, you know, that they like to, sing, but only to themselves. Like the realizations in the first three stanzas, I think, they could be somewhat youthful. And
that's
I think
true.
That request
that's
is
true.
Just someone looking for direction
but
in their life.
He did say
it's just an opinion.
Many years upon this earth, so. That's
yeah,
good,
but
that,
you know, when you're 25,
you're right.
I don't know. It could go either way. I just wanted to say that because I thought it was, that's the vibe I got from it. So. What do I know? Okay, so it's back to Gene. Oh, he did.
No,
yeah, him, her. Her, not you, Gene. Gene. Okay. And the next one I have is Jack. Jack, are you up for one? Yeah, you're up for one. You're good. Yeah, find one. Oh, you got one. You brought one. Yay, right. Yay,
yes,
Jack.
Did. Right. So did Chris. I dropped it at the bottom.
Yes, he did. Here we go. I didn't want to give him a girly piece. Here we go, Jack. Whenever you're ready.
All right. This is called Pain Cycle by Duke of St. Paul. Don't stop when I say, if I don't listen, will it go away? Things always seem better when wishing. Always gotten something. Once gotten, something feels missing. I'm ever longing, caught between running and jogging. I miss everything. I hate everything. Dim lighting in a dismal palace. Cheap booze filling my golden chalice. Losing my grip on where the rail is. Hammer my thumb instead of where the nail is. It's all self-fulfilling. Kill me anytime you're ready. I'm willing. End poem.
Great read, Dex. Thank you very much. And, Laurent, why don't we kick it with you, please?
Well, can you come right back to me, please?
Sure. Chris, how about you?
What a great write. I love the couplet. I mean, I particularly like the couplet, losing my grip on where the rail is, hammering my thumb instead of where the nail is. I mean, that's just so profound to me. I also like I say, things always seem better when wishing. Once gotten, something feels missing. It's like, yes, I've reached the summit, but where do I go now? So I just go back down. A really great write, Dexter. Good to hear some of your poetry. Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. And Gene, how about you?
I don't know, Dexter. It seems like there's no satisfaction here. Reminds me of the Rolling Stones. You know, everything, when you wish for something or hope for something, it just doesn't, it never satisfies you. You know, you're never satiated. You know, you miss everything, you hate everything. It's a real contrast in thinking. But I want to tell you, my true remark on this is down in those last two lines. It's all self-fulfilling. Kill me anytime you're ready. I'm willing. Trust me, you're going to be around a long time with an attitude like that. Because when you say stuff like that, trust me. You're going to hang around and they're going to make you suffer. Never talk to just ride
you,
the original train. Trust me.
Thank you, Phil.
Anyway, it was a great one. It was a great one. Thank you. Oh, my God.
Thank you, Gene. All right, Laurent, how about you?
Yeah, this I really, really like this particular piece. I remember longing, thought between running and jogging. I miss everything. I hate everything. It's a little bit of that walking that razor's edge of an emotional contrarian. Once achieved, once something is selected, the other choice becomes very, very attractive at that time. Remember, pain is its own reward. It arrives wearing many a mask. Love the piece.
Thank you, Laurent.
Thank you, Laurent. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm really sorry I missed the read. I seem to have the worst timing lately as far as missing the LNP men reading. But I did get a chance to read this earlier and just read over it again now as people were commenting. Wonderfully written couplet. First of all, I like that you took your chosen song Everlong and the one line you played with that word with I'm ever longing, caught between running and jogging. And I like that because people can think of running and jogging as the same thing, but they're not. Running, there's almost that idea of running from something that scares you, and jogging is that idea of just having fun, and you're caught between these two ideas. I really like this all the way through, but I really particularly like losing my grip on where the rail is, hammer my thumb instead of where the nail is. Great flow to those lines, plus it makes me think of Ozzy Osbourne's Crazy Train. That is really cool. But it's really this, you know, personal battle, you know, of wanting to stay somewhere and yet wanting to get away, and this kind of indecisiveness of where exactly do I fit into this mess, and do I even want to be part of this mess? So great right here, Dexter.
Thank you, Pam.
Well said, Pam. Dexter, I'm going to go with that second couplet. Things always seem better when wishing. Once gotten, something feels missing. There's that idea, hey, it's great to get things when you wish for it, but once you get it, it doesn't feel quite right because you haven't earned it. It hasn't, it's gotten there by alternate means than other you going to get it. So there's a sensation of loss, especially when you hit on the next two stanzas. I'm ever longing, caught between running and jogging. With the running angle, it's like you're running towards, and once you get there, you're jogging in place instead of continuing the thought in moving into where you want to go. And I miss everything, I hate everything, but indecision. Now that next one, the cheap boost filling my golden chalice, is kind of washing my troubles away, and that's where the next one comes in, the hammer. That notion of, yeah, going to work the next day, and what do? You missed the nail because you had a bit too much the night before, and boy, your thumb pays for it hard. And it, like you said, it's all self-fulfilling. It's that kind of prophecy that walks hand in hand. If you walk that lane, it will definitely meet you somewhere down the line.
Good. Thank you, Rex.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, Gene, we're coming back to you.
Well, this time I'm tossing it out here for Chris Bond. So whenever you're ready, Chris.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. This was only written an hour ago, but here we go. Another musician's death. But before we roll eyes and blame rock and roll life, let's stop, take a breath, think before anything is said. He was a husband. He was a father. He was a son. Think of them before you condemn. Few of us knew this man. Many only heard his drums or saw him on stage. We only saw the shining star. We knew nothing of the turmoil or internal battles that may have raged. So please stop and think. Don't say musician's death, trivialize. and lazily say it's probably drugs or drink. Think of him and his music and be grateful for the gift he left. End poem.
Great read, Chris. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, why don't you kick us off?
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely. This one hits hard. I like that you open up with another musician's death. I mean, it's great all the way through. And a wonderful tribute to Taylor Hawkins. But I like how in the beginning you remind us that let's not judge. Let's stop and take a deep breath, because we don't know everything that was going on. We don't know everything that his all of his interpersonal turmoil. And he was a husband. He was a father. He was a son. You know, think of his family. Think of his friends. And this actually makes me think of the lead singer of the Foo Fighters, Dave Grohl, who obviously, as Rexy pointed out, was the drummer of Nirvana. So he had seen his friend Kurt Cobain die unexpectedly and from a similar situation, as well as his friend Taylor Hawkins. And so we've got to think of people like of Dave Grohl, of people who were family and friends to Taylor Hawkins and to anybody. And what I like about this is not just about Taylor, but it's about anyone who suffers from depression, who suffers from addiction or suffers, from their own personal demons, and how we can't trivialize, we can't judge. We just have to take that deep breath, remember their loved ones, and be thankful. As you say, that wonderful ending line, think of him and his music and be grateful for that eternal gift. That is a beautiful ending line. Very well done.
Well said, Sam. Thank you very much. And Dex, how about you?
Yeah, I thought that this ride captured very well, from the lineage of Nirvana, people or, just musicians saying that they're so much more than musicians and really kind of downplaying that whole stereotype and the MTV and everything that was kind of created as this facade of who they are. And I think that for the most part, both bands, well, he wasn't in Nirvana, obviously, but just the whole lineage of that whole pipeline of music downplayed that whole stereotype. I think that this kind of captured it very well.
Excellent. Thank you, Dex. And Jean, how about you?
I just hit the button. Chris, I think you had a great perspective here. Sometimes I think we all really need to be reminded. Your society has surely become hardened due to the sad frequency of musicians and public figures' death. You're absolutely right when you said, just another, drug, death or whatever, however you worded it in the beginning, because my head wasn't there for a while. It happened. But I think this was a compassionate piece, recognizing that these are human beings with families, children, and friends. I just think it was a great perspective. So well done.
Thank you, Gene. And Laurent, how about you?
Yeah, a really sad event. I was struck by the fact that, the poem mentioned the fact that he was a husband, he was a father, he was a son. Think of them before you condemn. The lifestyle of a traveling musician who may be going to concert after concert, ongoing for, months, more than a year. And the jet lag, the pressures of publicity, you start to learn to take the tranquilizer, to take something to help you with the jet lag, something to calm your nerves before the show. I mean, you just get used to it, I think. And, you know, as you grow older, your body changes. And sometimes things that helped when you were younger don't help anymore. I know he complained of chest pain before he collapsed. That could have been anything. But I think the poem does a great job of not demeaning or trivializing his death, but by considering who he was as an individual and what he accomplished and letting it lay there. I think that's perfect.
Thank you, Ron. And you're right. He did complain of chest pains in the last phone call down to the front desk before he died. And they did find out his heart was twice its normal size. So
wow.
There's something in that. Yes. It normally weighs around 300 to 350 grams. His was topped over 600 grams. So his heart was way above where it should have been. And Chris, you took a great perspective with this, especially considering that part that Grant just read, husband, father, son, think of them before you condemn. There is that notion of how easy it is to just get on the lifeboat with everybody else and say, oh, it's just that, it's just this, it's just that. They don't bother considering anything else outside of that. That's why that piece we did earlier in the show with Stevie Nicks' poem was such a nice touch, because that's something she got to offer as opposed to the critics and the papers and the news get to offer. They don't offer this end of it, which is what you did, something from the heart as opposed to instant condemnation and, well, you shouldn't live like that. Well, you know what? There were other things going on, so you can't live inside one skin unless you actually live inside that skin, and that's the point I'm making here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're coming back to you, Gene. Aha, that one was on purpose.
Chris, is that you coming back?
I'm going to have to ring off now, like I say, work calls, unfortunately. It was unplanned phoning, so thank you for having me, and good night, all of you.
Oh, thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Glad you hung out.
Thank you. Take care of you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Okay. Rex, do you want to play one of those songs? Or do you
want to... Why don't we do Stevie Nicks?
Sure. You got it. Okay, here we go, everybody.
That was Stevie Nicks. That was a Golden something or other. I can't remember. But anyway, she performed that with the Foo Fighters, and the duet she was singing was with Dave Grohl. And she said that was the best it's ever done with them as the backup for her. So she enjoyed her time with them, which says a lot. All right, Gene.
Okay. Cool Venus. Rex, I'm going to give you...
Diane's going all out. Damn. Boom, shakalaka, boom, shakalaka, like a down,
Diana. Absolutely. Okay, Rex, so we have you read the next one. It's a piece by Betty Page. And I looked and I didn't see any high heels or skirts. So you go. There you go.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Infinite Skies by Betty Page. Butterflies fly high, swirling in infinite skies, neon glowing stars, caressing curves sweet, winding down dark canyon roads, conversations swerve, crazy adventures, moonlights illuminating nights filled with laughter, electric embrace, we're singing along to songs, wish we'd keep driving, sipping on fine drinks, tropical rainbow colors, neon lights magic, mystical forests, sticky, sweet, shimmering trees, pleasurably high. Cotton candy clouds, summertime's orange sunshine, citrus bubblegum. Lost in slow motion, impressed how cool he plays drums, singing so vibrant. Crashing waves of sound, just wanting somebody to love before they vanish. Butterflies take flight, ascending midnight skies, endless melodies. Joyful memories in another place and time when we were younger. Before pure heartbreak, we always could numb the pain, spend nights in the rain, vivid crimson red, dripping from my broken heart, skies filled with silence. End poem. All right, Pam.
Okay. Well,
I'm
great
start with you.
I really liked this one. I liked how it had some of Betty's fun, delightful imagery, like citrus bubblegum, and neon light magic and a little touch of sensuality, but not a whole lot. Mostly to me, it was first of all a tribute to his music, especially where she says, lost in slow motion, impressed how cool he plays drums, singing so vibrant. Wonderful tribute lines there. But I also like about how this is about, you know, looking back at those days when we lived life to the fullest and we loved to the fullest and we just reached for our dreams. Butterflies take flight, ascending mist, midnight skies, endless melodies. There's that idea of going on to another realm or that idea of reaching for our dreams. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
This is a great piece. It's an appreciation in so many ways of the music and of the moment. The use of butterflies throughout this is indicative of spirits perhaps taking flight, stars becoming stars, one with those midnight skies. Butterflies take flight, ascending this midnight skies, endless melodies, very much into the music, pleasurably high, and memories are spawned, spawned by music, joyful memories in another place and time. When we were younger, there's a return. Music can always bring us back. The end, the vivid crimson red, dripping from my broken heart, skies filled with silence, is a real, well, not a come down, if you will, but it's a real change in tone to something that's awfully sad. But really well written piece. I enjoyed this.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
Well, I think that this was a nicely done piece. And as always with Betty, I think the imagery was there spot on. And I thought she was nicely penned. And I thought that, you know, it was just great job. Great job, Betty. It's just a lot of things. I'm not sure if these are any of those as references to things I'm not aware of or what it is. But it was nicely written, and, you know, it was a great read. So it works. Nice job.
Thank you, Jean. How about you, Dex?
Dex dropped, unless he came back.
Oh, okay.
Oh, he came back.
Well, I'm going to go into that centerpiece. Mystical forest.
Yeah, I'm back. If I stay stagnant for too long, Skype will drop you. That's the way that it goes.
Ah,
I found.
Okay.
But no, this, I thought that this was a wonderful piece, and I thought that what others had said, it captured it very well. It reminded me of youth, you know. Electric Embrace, we're singing along to songs, wish we'd keep driving. You know, in that drive, you never really know when it's going to really stop or turn off, but all of a sudden, suddenly it does. Mystical Forest, you know, it just has a lot. It seems like a remembrance of a trippy weekend or something all captured into one. It's just very beautiful.
All right, Dex, you got where I was going. That center section with the mystical forest, pleasurably high. I hit on that next stanza right in the middle. Summertime's orange sunshine. Well, back in the day, we had a little orange pill called orange sunshine. It was an acid trip to behold. And you hit on the motion in that one, Dex. Nicely done. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Okay, the next one I'm going to pick up is by Diane D. If she's not too busy dancing in the lobby, we're gonna play her piece. Here we go.
Just Can't Walk, a parody of Times Like These by the Foo Fighters, by Diane D. I want to turn and walk away. I just can't tell night from day. There's quicksand in my brain. I'm a lone man fighting. I'm a radar pulsing red. Something once or twice. Die, dying. I just can't walk, we live to die once more. I just can't walk, we fight to fight once more. I just can't walk, we have to jam once more. I just can't walk, stop or not once more. I, a new breath I inhale. It's a whole new day to rid the world of all its dark. I wish we prevailed united. Do we get to roll again? Or once more say goodbye? Fly, flying. I just can't walk. We live to die once more. I just can't walk, we fight to fight once more. I just can't walk, we have to jam once more. I just can't walk, stop or not once more. Walk, we live to die once more. I just can't walk, we fight to fight once more. I just can't walk, we have to jam once more. I just can't walk, stop or not once more. Can't walk, we live to die once more. I just can't walk, we fight to fight once more. I just can't walk, we have to jam once more. I just can't walk, stop or not once more.
Is everybody on mute?
Yes.
I don't
great
know.
Read, Diane. I just wanted to make sure there was wasn't another stanza coming. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud, Diane. It is very much appreciated. Dex, why don't we start with you, please?
You know what I kept thinking of is that I think it's by Buddha quote that he says, The problem is that we always think we have more time. You know, I think that we want to fight once more. We want to, hold on, let me bring up the exact lyrics. I can't walk, we live to die once more. I can't walk, we fight to fight once more. Jam once more. You know, all of these things once more. We always think we have time to do it once more. But we don't always have time. Sometimes you can't walk. I thought that this was a very well done piece and very courageous SoundCloud.
Excellent. I like that. Thank you very much, Dex. And Laurent, how about you?
The contrast of the voice, the words rendered, and you know, kind of expressionless, not a monotone, but strongly without expression. Just it was a wonderful contrast to the very lively music, which I enjoyed. I'm sure there's a backstory to this that would aid my comprehension. But what Dexter said made perfect sense, so I will go with that.
Excellent, thank you. And Pam, how about you?
I like the way that this felt like we should be in a smoky jazz type, you know, room, all listening to it. You know, the repetitive lines added a nice beat to it. It was a great parody. I really liked this all the way through, but a new breath, I inhale. It's a whole new day to rid the world of all its dark. And just that whole thought of, you know, maybe today is that day when the world becomes a better place. I also really like, I just can't walk, we fight to fight once more. And I just can't walk, we live to die once more. We live to die once more makes me think of that one quote, and I can't remember exactly, but something about how people die before they actually are died if they don't live life to the fullest. And that's what that makes me think of. And it also makes me think this, like that whole stanza there and the general tone of the song makes me think of how oftentimes we fight those small daily battles, especially when it comes to depression. And each battle we win is a victory and helps us to move forward one more day. So just a beautiful and powerful write and very well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Pam. What about you, Jean?
I think this was a nicely written piece. I love the first stanza. That lead-in stanza is very, very well done, as is the third. And, the chorus is, excuse me, nicely written. Great thoughts throughout. But I think Dex really nailed it. You know, we always think we have one more day. Well, yeah, we got tomorrow. We'll do it tomorrow. Yeah, let's do that tomorrow, and not everybody gets tomorrow. I think that really is the crux of the whole thing right there. It's, I don't know. It's something to always keep in mind.
Excellent. Since this is a parody, I think Diane went with the layout and intervals to match it with the song itself. I'd have to check that, but I'm pretty sure she did that. Now, as far as the voice in this, she dug in deep. The band was having troubles at this time. They didn't gel in the studio, and everybody was thinking more on production instead of what they were putting into the music itself, and they kind of split for a bit. And Dave Grohl wrote this song, Times Like These, and this kind of hits on the note. I want to turn and walk away. I just can't tell night from day, this quicksand in my brain. I'm a lone fighting man. I'm a radar pulsing red, something white, but twice dying. There's that notion of how they all felt or how he felt in the studio and how they weren't doing match to match what they usually did as far as a team. And then that other thing, a new breath I inhale, it's a whole new day. There's kind of there's a sense of hope in those notes right there. So I think she hit on the idea of what was going on at the time with the band pretty well. Nicely done, Diana. Thank you. Oh, Jean, we're coming up back to you.
Okay, Pam, the next piece is up for you, so whenever you're ready.
Okie dokie, Smokey. Sorry, I didn't come up with anything that was on topic. I wrote this for a contest that Chris Bond ran where you had to choose your favorite David Bowie song, and your poem had to be titled that, The Man Who Sold the World. Well, anyways, that was my favorite song. So the thing is I figure because Nirvana also did a cover of The Man Who Sold the World, and Dave Grohl was in Nirvana, and Dave Grohl also was in Foo Fighters with Taylor. I figure, well, this is the Kevin Bacon of poems. So with that being said, this is The Man Who Sold the World, and it goes like this. Look into my eyes and see the things I've seen. Look into my consciousness and see the dreams I've dreamed. Climb this spiral and staircase. Where it goes, I do not know. But take a chance and take a step towards the farthest cosmos. Call me whatever title pleases you. I can't remember my own name. Once I seemed important, but now I'm just someone to blame. Yes, I bought the world because it put itself up for bid. Too many little Pandoras were lifting too many unlatched lids. Some say that someone's in control. Some say that it is me. I say the answers cannot grow until we plant the seed. There's a loss of faith and hope that lingers in the air and a worn down wooden sign saying, fire, please beware, and home.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Dex, why don't we start with you, please?
Uh-oh, we
yeah,
made it too long. Oh, there
yeah,
it is.
No, I'm all right, sorry. I'm back. No, I thought that this was I thought that this was a fantastic write, and a loss in faith, but more of a found faith in doing, I felt. You know, because it's almost taking your own faith into your own hands and taking your own future into your own hands is what I thought of. You know, instead of relying on dreams and things like this, it's and placing blame, it's kind of taking taking back ownership into your own life. I thought it was very well done, Pam.
Thank you.
Well said, Dex. Thank you. Laurent, how about you?
As usual, Pam, a sterling effort. The stanza, "Yes, I bought the world," jumped out at me immediately because it implied having bought the whole scenario, being comfortable with the world and what you're expected to do and what you had to do and not do. And it cost you perhaps your control. But in that loss of control, you learned that as important as you are, the name, a title, a tag, whatever, is not as important because you've chosen to be someone to blame. Yet that first stanza is a wonderful thing. Look into my eyes and see the things I've seen. Look into my consciousness and see the dreams I've dreamed. And you call it a spiraling staircase. But you sound a little world-weary at the end when you talk about the worn-down wooden sign saying, "Buyer, please beware," because you may have bought much more than you wanted to at some point or initially. Great piece, Pam.
Thank you, Lawrence.
Well, Cynthia, well, thank you. And Jean, how about you? Jean, you're mutating. No?
Why? What?
Hey, that was the first time I said anything.
I know. You know, I think this was great. I said there's nothing like full disclosure. You know, you bought the world, you found out what it was all about. And here, you can, somebody else buy it. I'm done. Too much confusion and stuff. I just say, and I much enjoyed your take on the prompt. Out of the stanza, I mean, so many because I liked a bunch of them. But this one here, you know, yes, I bought the world because it put itself up for bid. Too many little Pandoras were listing, too many unlatched lids. That was, you know, I liked that a lot. I thought that was very true. All those little Pandoras are all wandering around. Can't wait to start some trouble.
That's right.
So that was a great set of lines to me, but there was a lot of them, so don't think I only like that one. Great job.
Thank you.
All right, Pam. I think the title says a whole lot because in order to sell, you have also had to have bought or at least bought into the premise of what you were going into to begin with. And those first two stanzas kind of hit on the hope. And then that third stanza kind of walks the a little backwards. I can't remember my own name. Once I seemed important, but now I'm just someone to blame. So there's the downfall. And then the obvious thought, yes, I bought the world. And those last two stanzas kind of hit on the thought of some say that someone's in control, some say there's me. I say answers cannot grow until we plant the seed. And there's an obvious truth in that. But I do like the back end of this with the worn down wooden sign saying, "Why, please beware." I still remember that note to a caveat and all. Yes, buyer beware. may not like what you're getting, but it's up for sale anyway.
Thank you, Rex.
You're welcome. Or Jean.
Oh, shoot, I'm supposed to have my mic, aren't I? Okay, I'm coming. I'm going. Okay, Yes, we're good. Okay, guys, I'm going to put this piece up by Audio Wings. And I have an audio. So, here we go, ready?
Like a phoenix, you rise from the ashes. Here's to hoping you will conquer what you penned in silent reverie. These ever-ceaseless battles, contingent on the bias you despise. Meaningless vestiges of the past try to haunt your waking dreams. Nothing more than carrion and refuse, your power you took back. What a pleasing sound a flint makes when scratching on the stone. Your eye entranced by fire, depraved foundations crumble to the ground. Remnants of the home you set aflame lay eternally mocking. They don't know they are but ashes, and the wind is at your call.
Great read, Ogden. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. We really appreciate it. All right, Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
There's a great power in her words. I'm almost taken aback by the skill, especially in the third stanza. What a pleasing sound a flint makes when scratching on the stone. Your eye entranced by fire, depraved foundations crumble to the ground. It sounds like it was something in the past that was perhaps difficult to deal with. Remnants of the home you set aflame. I mean, if you take it literally, ashes were created, or you set it aflame metaphorically, and those who live there don't know their ashes, but they are. I don't know. I'm getting odd things from this one, but it's beautiful stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laurent. Pam, how about you?
Well, this is just absolutely beautiful. She has such a wonderful reading voice, and I like how she takes the theme of rising out of the ashes, becoming that phoenix, and takes it deeper with lines like meaningless vestiges of the past try to haunt your waking dreams, nothing more than carrion and refuse, your power you took back. And, you know, to me, those lines are either the past where the person themselves did something wrong or something was wrong was done to them, like abuse. But either way, whatever the past is, it is the past. I like how the end line of that stanza says, You know what, that's the past. Leave it behind you. It is nothing but carrying the refuse. You can take your power back. And remnants of the home you set aflame lay eternally mocking. I really like those lines, too. And this really makes me think about how sometimes, whether they're blood family or whatever, you just have to walk away. Set those bridges on fire because you're never going to cross them again. It's time to just move on, walk through the ashes, and soar because, you know what, there's just better things calling you. It's a powerful and emotive write on healing and inner strength, and it's very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Well, I got to say, you know, it is another one of those things. Excuse me, I'm not familiar with the song. But I looked at MJ's AN. This one is for anyone whose foundations were filled with depravity they should never have seen. And this is a toast as you might call it, to take back your power and choosing to let go of the past you never chose, burning down whatever is left of it inside you. So that's a great, you know, just a great IN to put with this. And, you know, the prompt was a song called Monkey Wrench. You know, and she's talking about broken things and taking back your power. You know, monkey wrench, someone can throw a monkey wrench into your plans and screw everything all up. But somebody can take a monkey wrench and put things all back together, too. So I think that's, in my thoughts, it's kind of a play on words. I don't know if that was the intention. But I think that it just kind of came together that way for me. And MJ, I think you did an excellent job, so nice work. Nice work. Thank you.
Thank you, Gene. I think you're right. You throw the monkey wrench into the idea of the depraved condition, the foundations you find yourself wallowing in, and like she sits on that note of what a pleasing sound a flint makes. There is that time when you've decided or have decided that it's best to burn yourself to the ground fully and be rid of all that hangs loosely about your frame in order to actually walk away from that darkness, that depravity, or depraved foundation crumbled to the ground. And there's that note of burning oneself alive, effigy, so to speak, in order to walk away from that that angled concourse of darkness. Leslie.Argo, thank you very much. All right, Jean.
Okay, we have one left. One left. So put that up
right
now. Yeah, but we got one poem left, so I think this will be it. That's the end of them. Okay. Good night, Zach. Thanks for joining. And this
Good
is called I Can Run Back to You.
Stop the name.
By Martha. So, I'm going to put this on, and we'll be good to go. Here we go.
I Can Run Back to You by Martha Gell. No matter what happens, baby, it's true. I'm so blessed. I can run back to you. I snuggle safe and tight in your arms. I hear your heartbeat as you keep me warm. I feel you touching me gently on my skin, and I'm so thankful you'll touch me again. And baby, though my plans fall through, I know I can always run back to you. Run back to you, you'll take me in. You'll wrap me tight in your arms again. Then you'll kiss me sweetly on my face. Baby, you'll snuggle me back in my place. Though sometimes this world can get me down, in you I find my solid ground. And I live on knowing it's true that I can always run back to you. Run back to you, you'll take me in. You'll wrap me tight in your arms again. Then you'll sweetly kiss me on my face. Baby, you'll snuggle me back in my place. 'Cause I'm the one you love, and you're the one I'm dreaming of. And here in this world we built for two, I know I can always run back to you.
Great, Martha, thank you very much for that. It is greatly appreciated. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it. There's something different about Martha's singing here that we've heard before. Maybe the cadence, maybe the piece itself, but something was definitely a little bit different, and it walked a very different path. Nicely done, Martha. Pam, what about you?
You know what I think it is? Well, first of all, I do think she drew out her notes a little longer on a technical level for the singing. But what I really think about this is that it's deceptive. It makes you think it's a romantic rite, but it's not really, because it's all about how the person keeps taking the same person back over and over again. They go out to explore the world. They go out to explore other options. They go to see if the grass is greener on the other side. They realize it isn't, so they keep running back to this person over and over again, who keeps taking them back no matter what. And so you think, well, this is romantic, but then you realize it says, because I'm the one you love and you're the one I'm dreaming of. So really there's only love on one side. And it's that idea, to me anyways, and I could be wrong in my interpretation of it, but to me it's that idea of going to somebody when they're convenient for you and everyone else has, you've had enough of what other well you're dipping your bucket in. So.
Okay. Wow. Now the wishing well is empty. Laurent, how about you?
No, I dropped.
Oh, and it's up to you.
Yep. Well, Pam, I didn't agree with you, but, you know, hey. what I see is kind of like this reminds me of someone that always has a shelter from any storm. No matter where you go or what you do, when things go wrong, you can always run back and just get under that safe umbrella, you know, of that loved one. You know, my actual comment to Martha was, you know, sweet thoughts, nothing better and more comforting as the loving arms of the one you love. So, but can I understand where you're coming from? You know, it was a nice piece. And it's always up for the interpretation. So nice job, Pam. And nice job, Martha.
Exactly. Oh, and I have to say, I should emphasize that I do actually like the song and the lyrics. And I get where you're coming from, Jean. And I think it could definitely be taken that way, too. And that, you know, I think that's just really a beautiful thought there. And the idea of having somebody to run through after the storms, I guess the cynic in me just doesn't take it that way. But like you said, it's really cool to have poetry open to interpretation.
Absolutely. I agree. I mean, I think, you know, that we can do that.
All right. We're on the back side of things. Great show, Jean. Thank you, Pam, Laurent, Chris, and Dex for coming to join us and read and comment. Much appreciated. And Diane and Robbie for hanging out on the board and backing us up there. Thank you very much. Next week, we're digging into the lyrics of Don't Fear the Reaper, so have a little bit of fun, and we'll do it up again.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes, there's a nice backstory to that song I don't think many people know about.
Now he's going to make his research. Okay, Professor. Check it out. In the meantime, everyone have a great night, and thanks for sharing your work with us, as always. Rex, awesome show, great prompt. I know, absolutely. Good job.